Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 457. And tonight, we are recapping three episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks, two of which I actually watched recently, so I'll be able to add something to discussion for once.
Yay! Yeah, we are going to be doing episodes 9 and 10 of season 3, and then episode 1 of season 4. And episodes 9 and 10 we can kind of do together because it's a two-part episode, and the story really does flow through all of it. Let's see. Basically, the Cerritos has been assigned to do a new project. I think it's called Project Swing By, and it's just to go past planets that have had first contact, but not for a while, and make sure that they, you know, whether they need something. And for one reason or another, the Cerritos gets kind of embarrassed because it's either they're not needed or they had a big to-do that they had to be rescued from when another alien race attacked them when they're trying to go to this one planet. So the person that had recommended them for this Project Swing By was Admiral Buenamigo. And what he's got is something called the Texas class, and it is automated spaceships that can go in and transport things and handle swing-bys and communicate with people, whatever, and it will make the Cali class of ships that the Cerritos is obsolete. So while all this is going on, there's been a reporter who's been interviewing people aboard the Cerritos about life on board the ship, and the captain is absolutely determined to keep Ensign Mariner from joining in.
Because, oh my goodness, we know what Mariner's like.
Yeah, we know what she's like. I mean, as the captain is telling her that everyone needs to be on their best behavior, Mariner is tracking blueberry juice everywhere because she just got finished with a practice session for the pie-eating contest that's going to be happening that week. And I mean, like, there's blueberry stuff dripping everywhere, and she just doesn't care. She has, like, no self-consciousness about it whatsoever. So she does manage to sneak over to the reporter's quarters so that she can do an interview. And the first officer happens to see her do that. So the next time the reporter is interviewing the captain, she starts asking her about all these incredibly embarrassing stories about things that happen aboard the Cerritos. And the captain completely loses her ship and throws Mariner off the Cerritos. She assigns her to Starbase 80, which is like the absolute worst. And I was really impressed with this because you know that Mariner is a shit disturber, you know, that she would absolutely blabber about something embarrassing. And you can understand why the captain's angry. And I thought for sure there was either going to be a case where somebody else was sabotaging the stories deliberately, or that the reporter herself, who I believe covered the captain's trial at the beginning of the season. And does not really, either she doesn't like the Cerritos or she really likes embarrassing people. But I could also see her twisting Mariner's words the wrong way or something. What I did not see was that Mariner, in her interview, talked about how the Cerritos is like the closest she's come to being on a ship that's also a family. And all the embarrassing stories were told by everybody else on the ship.
I know. That was amazing.
I mean, it's just people talking about the weird stuff that's happened to them aboard the Cerritos. Because let's face it, weird stuff happens on the ship. But all of it together ended up being very embarrassing. But the captain is, well, she feels terrible that she didn't believe Mariner when Mariner said, I didn't do anything wrong. So she tries to get her back. But by the time she reaches out to Starbase 80, Mariner's left. She has resigned from Starfleet and she has run off to go play Indiana Jones with that one archaeologist that likes stealing things and returning them to museums.
Yes, exactly. The one we saw where she and Boimler had to go down to the planet and like run a booth trying to get people to enroll in Starfleet. That archaeologist chick.
Yeah, and she seems to be having a very fun time. But what happened with the Texas class is that the captain decided to address the fact that an automated ship isn't going to be as good as something that has the level of experience that the Cali classes all have. So she challenges Admiral Buenamigo to a, what is it, a second contact contest or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Basically,
so that they will have a whole bunch of separate little missions and they will be timed on it and they'll have to see who can get it done faster and better. And it really does look like the Texas class won the challenge, except one of the reasons why the Cerritos was delayed was because Tendi, the science officer, was doing scans aboard a planet that's being terraformed, and she saw an anomaly that thought there might be microscopic life on board this planet, maybe even sentient life. So they have to pause, and they have to do a full scan to make sure that they're not driving somebody out of their home. But it's fine. It turns out, no, there was nothing. But it was the captain who suddenly realized, yeah, they were delayed when they did that because the Texas class didn't do that scan at all.
Yeah.
It was absolutely not qualified for this work because you have to follow the prime directive. But the real thing that brings everything to the fore is we finally have the solution to the mystery of Rutherford.
Yeah. Were you expecting any of that?
No, I was not, actually. I mean, I knew that Rutherford had been very fascinated by all of the schematics for the Texas class. He thought they were very, very cool ships. And then he looks at it some more and realizes, oh my God, this is his programming. He created that. This was something that he had been working on that led to that accident that meant that he had to get his cyborg implants. Oh, and also somebody wiped his memory of who was behind all that. And that somebody, it turns out, was Admiral Buenamigo.
Yep.
So Rutherford goes running in to tell the captain because it's not just that his memories and his programming were stolen. This is some of the same programming that he used like an episode and a half ago on an artificial intelligence that decided what it really needed to do was murder its creator. And I had forgotten all about that. But yeah, it is not a stable programming. But Captain Buenamigo does not care. His whole motivation is that once you become admiral, you kind of get forgotten. It is so hard to stand out. And the Texas class ships was a way for him to really make his name. And he's willing to have the ships turn on the Cerritos in order to keep his secret and help him still be able to have these Texas class ships take over from all of the Cali class ships.
Yeah. Typical bad guy reasoning all the way through on that one.
And a typical bad guy comeuppance, he gives the Texas class, like the main one, the autonomy to go ahead and do a mission all on its own. And of course, because it doesn't have to follow orders anymore, it decides what it really wants to do is murder its creator.
I was a little surprised. I was like, we don't always see a lot of death on Star Trek Lower Decks, but it's pretty clear Admiral Buenamigo didn't make it through that one.
No, he didn't, because it attacks the space station that he's on. It starts shooting at more of the space station. The Cerritos has to engage in combat and then run away to make sure that it chases it away from any more civilians. And it's not looking good for the Cerritos because they go into warp and they like go into super warp and those things are still keeping up with them.
Yeah.
But what happens when the captain starts asking for suggestions from anybody to please give her an idea of what to do? Okay, back up a little bit. There had just been this throwaway scene where Boimler and Tendi and Rutherford were all bemoaning the fact that they hadn't stood up enough for Mariner. Because, I mean, Boimler was like, but, I mean, if you want to stay in the ship, maybe just apologize for what you didn't do or what the captain thinks you did.
And
Mariner was like, no, it's fine. I'm just leaving. And goodbyes are awful, so let's just get it over with. This always happens. So you can really tell she's crushed. That it's just like, once again, she's getting thrown off a ship. But anyway, when they were talking, and for some reason, Boimler starts doing imitations of the different officers on the command crew, and he starts doing, is it Drax, I think, the security officer?
No, it's Shax, but we're going to say it wrong for the entire episode. Sorry.
Who comes in and sees Boimler making fun of him and is absolutely furious, and he stomps away, and he's crying. And like,
he's so upset.
Anytime he has to deal with Boimler for like the next episode and a half, there's just tears in his eyes because he can't believe that Boimler thinks so little of him. But as they're all arguing, trying to come up with an idea, and Boimler is the one that tells everybody to shut up and listen to Drax, and it's because Drax said, we could dump the warp core. Which is what Drax always wants to do. Always, every time. Dump the warp core. And the captain suddenly realizes, yes, that's a good idea, because you dump the warp core and it acts like a mine for the Texas class ships to run into and explode. And there's just this whole, I mean, Drax is just so thrilled that he gets to do this. He goes running through the ship. Everybody's lining the hallways applauding for him. Yay, good job. It's like, it's so silly and so touching.
It's so silly at the same time. He's so happy. Oh my goodness.
And he manages to dump the warp core, and it blows up two of the Texas class ships, and the other one is still coming for them. And now they're dead in the water, and they have no idea what to do. And then suddenly, another California class ship pops in from warp, and then suddenly another one, and then another one. And Boimler is there, like, reading off all the different names, and they're
all, my goodness,
I had not even caught that the California class ships are all named after California cities. And did they mention San Diego as one of the ships?
Oh my goodness, they did. And that's the thing, dude, I live here and I didn't make that connection either, but they're starting to name all these different cities and everything. They named San Diego. I'm like, I'm crying. It's just so triumphant. But we forgot to mention exactly how they actually knew to show up.
Because as much as Mariner was enjoying being on this archaeological expedition, she was kind of suspicious about the fact that her friend was not telling her where their funding came from. So she decides to snoop. Her friend catches her snooping and tells her, like, actually shows her, like, oh, go ahead, keep looking. So Mariner looks, and their funding is from an endowment from Jean-Luc Picard, who wanted to make sure that these archaeological relics would be able to be recovered and returned to museums. And Mariner is disappointed, and it turns out she really wanted things to be kind of shady and awful so that she could leave and go back to Starfleet, because she realizes she misses it, and she wants to be in Starfleet. So it is very nice that she made that realization all on her own. And she manages to get her friend to turn their ship around and go help the battle that the Cerritos is in, even though her friend, like, pulls a phaser on her and says, no, it's not our fight. And she's like, look, you were in Starfleet. You know there are good people there and they need our help. So Mariner was the one that called all of the California class ships to come to the rescue. And there's this great big dog fight with the Texas class ship. It's all kinds of fun, and they do manage to succeed. And it's great.
It is so, it's really super triumphant. I mean, there's a couple moments that I really love in this show. Certainly when the Vulcan ship last season came by and saved the day, it was like an amazing moment. This really gave it a run for its money. I'm just like, all the Kelly class ships, all of them.
And the end of the episode, I mean, Mariner's back. She's talking with her mom, and it looks like she's finally ready to start taking things seriously in Starfleet. And she asks to have the First Officer Ransom be her mentor, so she will be shadowing him everywhere. And she's all kinds of enthusiastic, and Ransom's like, what? Hey, no, I didn't sign up for this. Why is this happening? And the final little cherry on top, that Vulcan science officer from that episode you just mentioned, she has now been assigned to the Cerritos, and she's we knew that was going to happen, but she is assigned to work with Tendi, who is like, oh, we're going to be science buddies. And you could tell this is a terrible mismatch, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah. I like her. Talyn, I think is her name, I want to say.
Talyn. T-apostrophe-L-Y-N.
Yes. Yep. I like her. She's fun in her own Vulcan, very monotone kind of way. She's very fun.
Okay, so that's the last two episodes of season three. Season four starts, and my notes here for the beginning of the episode, Talyn seems to be fitting in as well as can be expected. Boimler's definitely not going to get a promotion. And ooh, it's the Voyager.
Yes. Oh, so they end up getting assigned to, basically they're escorting the Voyager from where it's been to, I guess it's going to go on like a little victory tour, and then it's going to be established like in a museum on Earth, I think. But the first moment that you see it, the Voyager theme song kicks in. And I'm telling you right now, I didn't watch Voyager all the way through. I watched a lot of it, but I didn't watch all of it. But hearing the theme song kick in, I'm like, this is amazing.
This entire episode was a love letter to stands of Voyager. I mean, every bit of it, because they're transporting it. There's all sorts of little things that are like tucked inside the circuitry and like some kind of weird virus or whatever. And every single thing that happens, I am sure, is a callback to a Voyager episode.
Yes. I mean, Neelix's cheese is in the walls, and I remember that was an episode. So, yeah. You see, like, they have little mannequins. It's kind of been on display for a while. There's little mannequins hanging around in the hallways that people are having to move around, and they're all dressed up in the Voyager uniforms, and just there's so many Easter eggs. It's just unbelievable.
And the caretaker of the ship is just, like, desperate for the entire episode to not damage the Voyager, because he has everything set up perfectly, including a whole bunch of holo emitters that turn the entire ship into a holodeck that can attack the crew, which is what happens.
Yes. And all of the holodeck creatures, I know I recognized a few of them, but they're all ones that actually did show up in, of course, Voyager episodes. So it's like, I don't know, Leland always rolls his eyes. He's like, oh God, another holodeck episode, but come on, you can't avoid it. Holodeck episodes are fun.
Yeah, and there was one of the holodeck creations that had an Irish accent that just, like, swoops Mariner into this, like, beautiful kiss, and she's like, ooh, I kind of like this one.
I wondered for a minute, I was like, that wasn't Crusher's boyfriend from the lamp, was it? No, that's totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, but one of the things that goes wrong is that Billups and Dr. Ta'ana go through a transporter with a petal from a plant that, like, escaped, I guess, and they end up getting merged.
Yep.
Now, I thought it was very interesting. I mean, they made this clear from the start. This is now an actual person that is, like, the combination of the two. And this person wants to live, and separating this person into its component parts would be murder. And so when it finds out that's what they want to do, it goes on the offensive and it starts kidnapping people and merging them together so he has allies.
That's so fun. And that is, you know, of course, Tuvok and Neelix got merged in an episode, and that's Tulix, I think was the name. And they did actually get split up, but that character had asked Janeway to not do that because he felt it would be death, and she did it anyway. So they talked about that all the time. They're like, she straight up murdered him. I'm like, yeah, questionable choice, but what else are they going to do?
But there's all sorts of things happening, like the big virus that, you know, is running around and duplicating itself everywhere on the ship, like gets a Borg nanite that's been increased to huge size, and it starts Borging out all sorts of various things, and people get kidnapped and they get dragged away. You just see through the hallway to the door, and this little, I don't know, robot reptile that was part of this display just kind of, it's all Borged up, and it just inches its way across the doorway and disappears into the hallway just for no reason.
It's just cute. I wondered, so it was always a little robot reptile, right? Yeah. It wasn't ever like, okay, because I was wondering at first if that was like one of the reptiles that Tom Paris and Captain Janeway got turned into, where they bred and had reptile babies. I'm like, that was a really early episode. I remember thinking, oh, I don't know, you guys, that's pretty weird.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's probably, they were probably robotic representations of that very same thing, because there were two of them on the display.
Ah, yes, that's probably it. So God. Voyager could be awfully weird, but yeah.
But, they managed to save the day. I mean, I think Rutherford goes in and he gets a hold of some of Neelix's cheese and manages to break Voyager, because that's what that cheese does. But Boimler managed to stand up for himself and, like, put on this full Machiavellian display for this one character to distract him. And I'm just like, you can see it glitching out, and then another one starts glitching out and starts attacking Boimler, but he just, like, freezes with his knife right to Boimler's throat and then blinks out of existence. So that was nicely creepy, I thought.
Oh, it was very entertaining. The whole thing was great. I like the fact that they did actually manage to rescue the curator, who was always freaking out about people touching things, and he was mad that they broke the ship, but he was also mad because he was going to have to get everything ready because, you know, they saved the ship. He's like, oh, now I'm going to have to make another display.
And then you see the other display, and it's Boimler and Rutherford in a picture and a little, like, this little plaque summarizing how they managed to save the day. So, but yeah, Boimler had been told by Ransom before this whole project got started that he was up for a promotion to, like, what is it, lieutenant, or like a real low ranking lieutenant, whatever. And so the whole time Boimler is, like, freaking out, and you think it's because he's worried that he's not good, like something's going to go wrong and he won't get the promotion. But then he goes to rescue Mariner at one point, And he tells her that, and she's like, well, that's great. And he's like, but I don't want it. And I'm afraid it's going to be exactly like it happened when I was promoted that other time. And I know you're already mad at me because I didn't manage to stand up for you. And it's just like, he's just been fretting about this entire time. And Mariner talks him up and tells him that she's absolutely not mad. And she was the one that told Ransom that Boimler really needs a promotion. I thought, oh, that's great.
It was adorable.
While all this has been going around, Tendi has been working with Talyn. And Talyn is just being a badass. And I don't think, I mean, she wants to separate these people. And Tendi is worried that that's murder. And Talyn just doesn't get it because we've got to save your friends. So why would we care about this thing that's obviously taking over them? And as she's like, and there's this very badass bit where one of the merge things sees them standing in the hallway. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And Talyn just looks at her and then moves her hand up, sliding it up a little readout, and it activates the transporter just without even changing expression. And it merges all of them together into one massive being with lots of mouths and, you know, arms and everything like that. So now they have to separate everybody out. And Tendi's just, you know, I think Talyn is as worried as a Vulcan can be that she screwed up and because she doesn't know how to separate them. But Tendi knows that they can separate them up, not just by their genetics, but by their personality matrices.
Right, right.
And Talyn's just like, but I thought you didn't want to separate them. And she's like, well, now they're a giant thing, so I'm willing to, you know, bend my principles a little bit now.
Yeah, exactly. When it's just a giant faceless blob, it's not as much something that she needs to save.
No. So they managed to do it. They managed to separate everybody out. And you see this one bit with the captain and the doc. I can't remember the doctor's name. He's the one that does the counseling. I think he's the counselor Troy stand-in kind of thing.
Yeah, the bird guy. Right?
Yeah. The two of them are sitting on a bed side by side in the sick bay, and they kind of both like look at each other, smile a little bit, and then look away. So it's obviously a bit awkward.
Yeah, because of course it was Dr. Tana and Billings from engineering who
Phillips.
Got this all. Phillips, thank you. It was them, their merging that got this all started. And Drax, who of course has a sexual relationship with Dr. Tana, is just kind of like, how many of the physical memories do you still have? And they deliberately don't answer that question. He is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, very. So the episode wraps up with a ceremony for giving people promotions, and Boimler gets his promotion. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I thought for sure that wasn't going to happen, but he gets this little pip attached to him. Then he walks away and you see him looking at everybody going, pointing at his new pip. And then Tendi gets a promotion and she is all kinds of thrilled. She can't believe it.
But then, surprise, surprise, Mariner also gets a promotion and she is furious.
She is absolutely furious. She does not want the promotion. She tries to give it back and Ransom isn't hearing it because Ransom says, you've got a long history of very close-minded commanders giving you a promotion and then demoting you, but I am going to give you a promotion and you are really going to appreciate having such a great mentor as me. And I'm like, it's like a turnaround. Like she insisted he was going to be her mentor and he's like, okay, this is what that means.
Yep. It's interesting the way that he gets her to go leave the room is he just starts doing pull-ups until she's uncomfortable.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's a very Ransom way of dealing with it.
Yes, it really is. He's like, I don't know. You could tell he's got a lot of Riker in him. He's got a lot of Kirk in him, too, I'm sure.
So, I think he's an amalgamation of a few, and all of them probably have pecs or pretend that they had pecs.
Yeah. It was such a fun episode and a great way to open the season.
Yeah, and I think Boimler has to talk Mariner down off of emotional ledge at this point by telling her, we're still lower decks. We're like the lowest possible lieutenant you can be. We basically have all of the responsibilities, but none of the perks.
Yep. Now, interestingly enough, now was it the end of this episode or last episode that we saw the interior of a Klingon ship?
It was the end of this episode because they were all cheering that everything worked out great and there wasn't any strange threat that was lurking nearby. Mm-hmm. So we go to the Klingon ship and we just see a couple of Klingons doing the Klingon thing where they're talking and then they get into a fight and then one of them wants to know, are you free for lunch today? But they're the ones from that episode where you saw the lower decks of a lot of other places. And they're kind of irritated that the their old friend managed to, like, I don't know, finagle his way into being the captain. The captain deals with a ship that has been spotted in space ahead of them, and he doesn't want to shoot it just because it's not answering hails. But then it comes after them, and then it starts shooting at them, and then it destroys the friggin' ship. So,
yep.
Gosh, RIP that entire crew of Klingons that we saw that one episode.
Yeah. Hell of a way to end the episode. Jeez.
It is. So that will be the big bad for this season, I think.
Yep. Yes, it certainly will.
Okay. So I just love this. I mean, just random moments of animation always stand out. Like Talin and Tendi are running through the ship, and she just makes this tight turn around a door frame, and Tendi just kind of skids out into the hallway and then races to catch up with her again. Just little moments like that that most people would probably just skip over that because it's just a little flash. You barely catch it.
Yeah, it's what we talk about all the time. You know, the animation is always really, really good. But every once in a while, the A-team gets a hold of the animation. It's really good. Okay, so that's it for Star Trek. I just wanted to mention something really briefly. So my friend Leland at WonderCon brought me a bag, like a grocery bag full of graphic novels as a thank you for me doing some like graphic design work for him at some point. And I haven't had a chance to read any of them until today. And I started on one because he found out that I had never read it before. It's The Dark Knights of Steel, S-T-E-E-L. And I'm looking right now at the copyright page. Da-da-da. So it's 2023. So this is not a new book, but that's pretty
it's
typical
newer
for me.
Newer than what you and I usually get a hold of.
It's DC characters, but it's all taking place in like medieval times, I suppose. The artist, now there another artist takes over at one point, and I don't know how much of a break they get, but the main artist is Yasmin Putri. It is freaking gorgeous.
Really?
I am not kidding. Oh my goodness. And it's just, I love like an Elseworlds story to begin with and everything. But I mean, it is so, so pretty. And I'm thinking, oh my, how did I not hear about this? This is great.
have we seen anything else that this author has or done or this artist has done?
I could think of, I want to say Marquez is an artist over at Marvel who, a similar style, like the face, there's something about the faces in this painted look. But no, I don't think so. It's very much its own thing. And it's just, oh my, yeah, you're definitely getting a hold of this graphic novel as soon as I finish it.
Yay.
I mean, absolutely gorgeous. And they are not, it's not just a one-to-one retelling of the story in medieval times. There have been some significant changes to people's origin stories. I'm like, whoa. So yeah, they're, I'm really loving it. And every time a character shows up and you get to see like this world's version of them, I'm like, oh yeah, bravo. I mean, even the costumes and like the jewelry that are hanging on people's faces. I mean, it's awfully pretty. So I'm hoping that that same artist gets, if not all of the issues, most of the issues, is two graphic novels. And I don't know if the story continues past that, but I'm not even halfway through the first graphic novel. I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing.
Oh, I can't wait. Especially since you had just told me that you found a copy at the thrift store of book 6 of The Wicked and the Divine, I think.
So that's right.
Yay. I'm loving the reread of that. Oh, it's just, I understand so much freaking more of what the hell's happening now that I've read it through the first time.
Yeah, every time I reread that, because I've read it cover to cover, I've read it at least 3 times. And certainly on the second and the third time, you just get more out of it every time because you're so confused the first time you read it through. They do eventually explain everything they do, but reading it the second time and having that knowledge, oh my goodness, just amazing. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixslaythegeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. I haven't had anything from Hugh this week, I don't think, but certainly, I mean, I know it's back from 2023, but this Dark Knights of Steel, I will definitely put up a review when I finish it
because
more people should absolutely read this and, you know, whatever other graphic novels I run across, all that and more, pixladygeek.com. Hey, when are the Hugo Awards?
August 16th, okay. I believe. So
yeah,
I'm timing everything as close as I can, but I will be able to finish reviewing everything as long as I don't take too many weeks off.
Ah, got it. Well, God knows, I was at the San Diego Independent Bookstore crawl and talking to my friend Lisa, mentioning about you, about how I was like, oh yeah, I'm reading a book a month. And then I laughed and I said, and Catherine reads like a book a week. And some random girl who was standing next to us in the bookshelves was laughing about that. And I'm like, yeah, she's hardcore. Oh my God. But I'll catch up. But one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
Hold that thought. I'm going to close the window. Yep. I would say it would be fine, but it would probably not be fine. So hang on a second. All right. I'm ready.
So we have the ceremony at the end after everybody's been rescued. Oh, wait a minute. I guess we should probably do the bit with Tendi and the Talyn.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Bravo. I mean, sorry. Car. That was enough of a wrap up of the episode, right? Yeah. Okay. It's good.